Okay, Greg, you've got a lot of questions and comments before you. Why don't you take the time to respond?
I'll do as many of them I can. First of all, to dispel a couple of misconceptions, that this comes from the national office. This comes directly from the general managers who met with me in January on the first week that I took my job and told me, and I agreed, of course, and I asked them the question, that we needed a new national program, just as Ambrose puts it, that would not complement Democracy Now, but, you know, that we should have something of our own,
yep.
And that it should be done during the election year. This did not come from me. This was agreed to, in essence, in concept, by the people that I started working with in January. And the discussions have continued at each time we've met in person and to some extent over the phone. The idea that I am going to impose a must-carry rule, I would like to see the evidence of that. This is a part of the alarmist strategy being employed to derail this. And I find it alarming that so much of what is trying to be attempted here is being distorted. The question of who hires that Lisa raised, somebody has to start the process. I am the executive director of the foundation. I'm not the programming director of the foundation or the programming coordinator. If any program is to ever emerge in this network, it's going to have to be produced by somebody. And national hires are done by the executive director. Now, I don't think it should be different than that. And I do agree that on important jobs like the network programming coordinator, there should be consultation. That's why I've asked to set up a search committee. But I don't agree with you that every hire for every position, for every producer, for every show should be subjected to some sort of community process. We're talking about a creative process.
But I just want to be clear.
I'd like to ask the board members to let Greg complete his remarks, and if they have a response at that time, and if time remains, then I'll recognize them.
I'm not responding only to any one person. I'm responding to the general thrust of what I've heard here, and I'm not trying to take issue with any particular people, but I'm trying to answer your questions as I took them down.
Okay.
I think that as far as the local versus national focus and the fact that this is going to be hugely disruptive to programming, well, I'll be honest with you. I think that the programming at some of these stations should be hugely disrupted with. And I think that some of the general managers agree with me, a number of them, actually. And I also believe that in private conversations, many of the people on this board would also agree with me. Unfortunately, that's not a popular thing to say in public. I'm saying it in public. I think that the schedules need to be changed. And I think that national issues, particularly in this year, are extremely important. It's not an either-or proposition. There is a need for change in programming in this network, and this is one way to do it. As far as the financial impact is that we are absolutely sure that this kind of programming will raise money. It will not only raise money for us through our national fundraising appeals, but also on the air. And there's a track record from 2004 and before that will prove that. As far as who's been involved, think about who's been involved already. Alan's on this call. Alan participated in the meeting, Alan Minsky. Sandra Loop, that's APFK. I haven't involved everyone at every station, but this is being discussed at almost every station. Sandra Lupien, a producer here who does the morning news, I've been discussing it with her. I have the support of not only the general manager here in Berkeley, but also in Houston, and I've discussed these ideas with Ernesto, the program director in Houston. Mitch Jezerich, who is currently doing the morning headline news and is connected with FSRN, is also involved. Vinnie Beecham, who is the programming coordinator at KPFA, has actually produced, a preliminary budget. Otis McClay, who's been involved with this network for a very long time, has been involved in these discussions. So there have been a lot of people involved within the Pacifica family. Not 100 people, not every member of the LSB, but we're talking about media, not politics. We're talking about a creative process, and that's where good programming comes from. The invitation is open to people throughout the network to be involved in this process and will continue to be open. And the format, nor the budget or any decisions, many of the week, how long, have not been decided or are carved in stone. But what I am saying is that something needs to happen, and if you want it to happen this year, the process has to start now. And it would be very sad if the elections of LSB members took precedence over the national referendum over the future of the country, which is going to take place this fall. It would be tragic if we decided that our own process was more important than making a national message to not only our sister stations, but to the 93 affiliate stations and the millions of people who depend on this network. Not just about our five stations or our provincial interests. It's about the responsibility that this network has to the entire country. The fact that we have no national programming that we produce on our own at the time is embarrassing. And I want to change that. I agree. But I am completely flexible about how this proceeds, and I am involving many people from within Pacifica. I am also, however, involving people from beyond the network, and I think to some extent that's part of what disturbs people, that I have actually had the temerity to hold one phone conversation with a number of people who aren't actually employed here. I think that evidently is some sort of heresy, and I didn't realize it when I did it. But I think that it was to the good because I came up with some fairly creative ideas with these people. And I have heard no criticism of those actual ideas. What I've heard is you should involve this group and you should involve that group. Well, let's come to the table and stop arguing about, stop arguing about whether I've touched all the right bases. Let's talk about the vision and let's talk about responsibility.
We're at time. I would like to weigh in on one point that people have made about process, and that is that as I listen to this, I'm hearing two ideas, or three actually, intermixed that are going to make it hard when we process the motions. And I think one of the key questions that is the starting point is there consent on moving forward with a program this fall? Then once you establish that one way or another, then there are other issues that arise, such as how shall it be done, who shall be involved, and then the question of carriage. And so I hope between now and when we reach it in the agenda, people think about those things so that we get them clear as opposed to sort of intermixed. And that's my request to the board as we go forward. The next item on the agenda is the Corporate Council Task Force report and the motion regarding access of board members to council. Who is going to be presenting that?
Since I've just spoken, I would like to defer to someone else on that committee to present at this point. I'm getting tired of listening to my voice.
Okay. Who would like to present from the task force? I can,
Mary Wood.
If nobody wants to, I can just read the text that was shared.
Sure, just read the text.
Can you remind me who sent it?
I sent it based on the minutes of the meeting.
Okay, hang on a second. I will get that in just a moment. There we go. Okay. Proposed policy. Any three PNB directors may submit a question to corporate counsel, copying the question to the PNB, including the executive director. Either the executive director or the PNB chair will then forward the inquiry to council. Upon receipt of an inquiry, council will provide an estimate of the cost of answering the question for inquiries over $100. Council will copy the response to the PNB and the ED along with the actual cost. And before we consider it, I just want a clarifying question. Is the cost estimate a concurrent thing, or is it serial? In other words, do you get the cost estimate before you proceed, or is it to be done as an informational item as you proceed? What was the intent?
The intent was if it's under $100, the council would go ahead and just answer the questions, because we assume many of these questions are just things he already knows, it's a quick email.
And was the intent
that if the over the $100 was just so that the directors could be aware of what this is costing and that they could then pause and say, well, maybe I could simplify the question or maybe we can defer it or whatever. It gives you pause. At least you get a sense of knowing whether this is going to cost $1,000, which, you know, the bottom line is that we want the individual directors to become aware of how costly this may or may not be, and we're not suggesting it's one way or the other, because the point is we need to establish a baseline with our attorney and get used to what different questions entail and so on and so forth. So it was more informational.
Okay, and the other question I have is procedural. Is we've been asking for a financial impact. Was a financial impact statement prepared with the CFO?
We discussed it with Lonnie, and he would be able to monitor so that if he knows what the running cost is for the year, and he is estimating $50,000, I think he has set aside in the budget for council. And, you know, if he starts seeing that this is starting to exceed that, he would immediately notify us. So he would. So that was the response from that. Rather than ask the attorney to have to keep tabs of where they are with the $2,500 each month, et cetera.
Okay. Lonnie, do you want to comment on that?
I'd also like to speak.
Yeah, we'll consider. I'm just trying to get what the state of the motion is. Go ahead, Lonnie.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. We do have a budget for legal counsel. That's in our budget. And we also have with one of our attorneys. And remember, we have more than one. We would, with a corporate attorney, he has a retainer. So I would monitor it and let the board know when we are getting close or on projection with particular cases might get close or exceed. So I'll take that responsibility.
Okay, so just to clarify, the motion says we have to specify the budget line. The budget line is the national office budget line under administrative expenses for legal consultation. That's the source of the funds?
That's the source of the funds.
Great. Thank you. Okay. It's open for debate.
A point of information.
Yes.
Where is the quickest way to get a copy of this? Because I'm looking.
I'll distribute it right now via email.
Greg sent it to the board and Dave.
Who sent it?
Greg.
Greg, okay.
Yeah, I'll resend it right now.
Thank you. I would also like to say, Dave, can you give me your opinion on this? I'd like to say, from my point of view, I'd like more than three people. I was, frankly, I was on the programming committee the other day, and some people on that committee wanted to run something by the attorney, and I thought, in my opinion, it was not enough to merit bringing to the attorney. And I'm very concerned from past experience with attorneys representing this foundation that with only three people wanting to discuss something, if there's no way to control that it's still too very, very easy to have this get out of control where we're asking for something that's going to be very costly. So that's my idea, and I'm open to any other suggestions as to how we could control our desires to get information from the attorney where it can get out of control. Thank you.
For the debate?
This is Lydia, if you can put me back on the stack.
Okay. Before... Oh, yeah, you didn't speak to the substance, right? You were just clarifying things. Go ahead.
Okay, so, yes, of course we considered it. That's actually why we made it.
Just
oh, you're right.
I believe I was on the list.
That's true. I'm sorry,
okay,
Lydia. Will you, LaVarne?
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead, LaVarne. I apologize.
Thank you. Thank you. I was on the committee also, and I have a concern, and it's Teresa touched on some of the points there. I think that if you look at best practices in the not-for-profits in terms of boards and attorneys, that this is an exercise that I think is a little futile and is not really, I think, what in terms of moving forward and addressing issues, I don't think that this really gets at that. And that I think that it has sort of like positioned the attorney as always a consultant to the management or the ED's positioning or ED's ability to manage or direct the foundation. And I think that, again, that in terms of this would not really, I don't think other boards would really consider this a best practice in the industry as setting up this process. But that's it. Thank you.
Lydia.
Okay. So the point is, obviously, we can revisit this policy at any time, but until we establish a baseline of interaction with the attorney, we do not know. Everything is speculative. It may cost us nothing. I mean, half of the stuff is just off the top of his head because he knows Pacifica so well, or it may cost a great deal. And then we can revisit this and say, okay, it should be more. However, in the specific instance, Teresa, that you raised about the programming committee, in fact, the three director thing absolutely worked because there was something that was put together that was broad and included everybody's complaints, and I had, because I was one of the directors that was asked to sign on to something when there was, I had called the other director and I said, no, I think that's too broad. It could just be the very simple two sentences of, you know, in the programming policy, the other thing is not relevant, taken into consideration what it would take. So that
I don't think people know what you're referring to.
I know. But all I'm saying is that Teresa raised something about how the three-person thing can work. And I'm saying this has already come up, and there was, something was raised, as she articulated, from the programming committee. I was asked to be one of the three directors. As one of the three directors, I was able to give feedback to streamline that so that, A, it wouldn't cost that much, and B, that it'd be more focused, et cetera. So the three-person consultation process, I think, is a great starting point. And also, you can't interfere, really. I mean, the attorney is really our attorney, and this board's attorney as the people responsible for the foundation. So you cannot keep us from having legal counsel if we elect to. So at least it's a good starting point. If in 2 months we find, oh, there's tons of people asking, and I agree, I don't think we should use the attorney to settle our political differences or to weigh in on our side or that side. And I think it's a mechanism that the majority on the committee decided it was a good starting policy, and the other members can chime in to that effect. We don't have to stay with it forever if it doesn't work. It may not even work for the attorney. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Rob.
One of the concerns that I have about the way this governance body operates is that we have almost no policies in place that implement the bylaws. And until we do that, there are always going to be huge numbers of questions about what are we doing and why are we doing it. At this point, almost every time this board tries to make a determination and lay anything down in policy, there is a hurricane of confusion in which we're accused of overstepping our bounds and breaking the laws and risking Pacifica's legal status and nonprofit corporation status. And I think that the fact of the matter is that one of the things that we're going to have to do is we're going to have to begin putting the policies in place that give us the legal framework that implements the bylaws, because if we don't, then it's always going to be a question about what are we doing and why. So I think, unfortunately, given the fact that so little is written down in either governance or management, we're going to have to go through a process in staying in touch with our attorney until we have a sufficient legal framework in place for executing our fiduciaries.
Further debate?
May I just maybe add it? I'll be
yes,
brief.
Go ahead.
I want to say I support what Lydia was saying, and I think I supported what I understood Rob to be saying, but especially pertaining to legal counsel, and I certainly can appreciate, you know, people's consideration about the cost and to make sure that this doesn't get too out of hand. But sometimes it just takes one person to see something that other people don't see that could, in the future, be a legal issue that could end up saving money if it's addressed kind of expediently and immediately. So I think the three-person or the three-director issue is a good one in terms of helping to determine what should be referred to a lawyer, because sometimes it just takes one person to see something that everybody does not see at that moment that could become a potential issue.
Further discussion?
Dave, this is Sarv.
Go ahead.
Thank you. It seems to me that every corporation, they do have their corporate attorney. And our corporation here, even though we are nonprofit, we have incurred over the past tremendous legal expenses. If we were to look in our budget, how much we spent in the last few years, it's incredible. And I think if some of the stuff would have been passed through an attorney, which we didn't have at that time, we did not have a corporate attorney, maybe those costs could have been avoided. So coming with a $100 limit on something, it's a real joke. I don't know how this $100 comes into it. A plumber makes, I mean, you can't even breathe. You talk to an attorney, he says it's time to hang up, $100. Well, you know, I think that somewhere we have to use our common sense and say that if you are a director of Pacifica Radio, that you are a responsible human being, that you are not going to misuse these kind of things and incur expenses for the corporation. And we have to develop that if we don't have that trust. And I don't think we ought to say, well, $100, then we have to have cost-benefit analysis. By the time you get cost-benefit analysis, $1,000 cost-benefit analysis against $100 attorney fee. So we have to, Lydia says that we have to start somewhere, but I think the $100 stuff, we should take it away, and we should use our judgment and our chair or the coordinating committee member, and with those three members who can ask for opinion from the council, they can talk and come to some kind of a resolution and submit that request to the attorney and get the answer. Thanks.
Would you like to make, I'm not clear, are you wanting to make a motion to amend, or would you like me to come back to you while you think, consider how to amend it to incorporate what you've said?
Right. I'll have to think through it.
Okay. Then you can ask for your answer again later. Any further debate?
I'd like to make a motion right away. And just to any three directors can ask for legal opinion and submit it to pretty much the same, except for this $100 limit on it.
So you'd like to strike the $100 limit?
Right.
Okay. So there's a motion to amend by striking a $100 limit. Is there a second?
Point of information.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then I guess it would read, the second sentence would read, upon receipt of an inquiry, council will provide an estimate of the cost of answering the questions, period. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's,
yeah.
All right. Thank you.
And also, I want to note that although Lydia spoke to the sentiment in there, nothing about whether the authorizing procedure is contained in the motion. But anyhow, the motion is to strike over $100. Is there any objection? Is there a second?
There was no second.
Second.
Okay. Is there debate on that?
Yeah, I object because it changes the whole thing. So if I can please explain.
Go ahead.
The point was is that up to $100, we would not have to wait for an estimate to be generated. He would just go ahead and answer, because we suspect most of the questions would be like $10 questions or $25 questions. That has been, you know, my experience. And so and so it would only be after, $100 that we would require the estimate. So we do not want to change the wording and make it such that we would have to wait for an estimate before he responds each time, to keep things moving, since we suspect most of the questions would be considerably less.
The difficulty in dealing with this is the implications that you're referring to aren't in the motion.
What do you mean?
So the motion doesn't say anything about ever waiting under any circumstances. It just says you get the estimate. It makes it difficult to deal with.
Mary Berg,
what's
can
that?
I be on the staff?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, me?
Yes.
Yeah, Well, obviously, whether it takes time or not, it's going to take more effort. So to have him give an estimate, make sure the dollar amount is right, is additional work, which if the whole thing would be under $100, it isn't necessary. And it well might take time because he's not going to make an estimate that he can't live with. Where, so if, what if it's 25 and he says 15? What if it's, I mean, it's obvious that this would just increase unnecessarily, so we thought, the workload of the corporate counsel. And for questions under $100, it isn't necessary. So I don't see why we're striking it. I agree with Lydia. I don't understand what you meant, Dave, about the implication. I think it's clear. Anytime you ask for estimates, you're adding to a workload of anyone.
What I was saying is that there's nothing in this motion that has any process contingent on the answer to the cost estimate. There's nothing in there that says anything about what one does one way or another. That was the point I was making. I have a point of information.
Hey, this is Lydia.
I have a point of information. Was our corporate counsel involved in the drafting of this, and did he have any clarifying comments?
I had asked corporate counsel if he had any problem with giving us a cost as he goes along on questions. So he answers question, this is $25 or whatever. He had no problem because it would have to correlate to his billing. He has to do it anyway. So that was his response to me on that particular
point of information.
Yes, Sambros.
Is the CFO still on board?
Yes, and he was on our call when
yes,
we developed
was.
This, and he recommended
I'd like to know how many.
Lonnie,
how many?
Are you still here? I think whoever said yes, he was.
Can you hear me?
An error. Oh,
yeah, you. Now we can hear you. How many $100 and below billings have you received from lawyers?
Yeah, well, you know, there are two important points to make. Lawyers don't bill in $10 and $25 amounts. You know, that is not going to be a realistic number.
Yeah.
About a quarter hour, any portion thereof. And, you know, if you've got an attorney with a $350 an hour rate, you can figure pretty much what a five-minute call will cost you because they bill out at quarter hours. And the second point is that with Dan Siegel, we do have a $2,500 retainer. That is just $500 a month. And right now the contractual arrangement we do have with him is that he can't, in theory, given the budget we have, expense portions of that $2,500 a month. I think that monitoring the budget would be monitoring the amount of that retainer he would use. And if he were to exceed that retainer, then I think I would inform everyone that this expense will break the monthly. Mentioned the yearly. The last point that I would make is that the expenses for the attorneys don't generally run up from specific questions.
Yeah.
They are, those bills go high when there's an investigation around personnel issues, investigation around where they're interviewing people. So the most of the expense will happen in bunches and not in discrete $100 or $200 increments. Where you ask the attorney to look at to where there needs to be an investigation. The second point and the last point that I'll make is much of the expense for an attorney depends on the expertise that the attorney has. If you ask an attorney a question they know nothing about, they're going to spend $1,000 going to do the research on it. And don't want to ask them questions they really don't have background in because you are simply running up the bill. And the last point is that there is a flowback. That is, if you ask an attorney a question, the attorney's going to call back, thereby also adding to the bill. So any estimate that you have on the front end will be compounded by the attorney needing to call back and forth around that issue. So there's a transaction of two or three, four phone calls that may be part of any transaction, not just an initial question and a cost estimate. So it's complicated.
So in the real world, SARS, the motion makes sense.
Yeah, I think
it
needs to look.
What do you say, Ambrose?
Can we call the question?
One at a time, folks. One at a time.
I'm sorry.
Lonnie?
Yeah?
Ambrose is asking your opinion about whether SARS motion makes sense in the real world.
Well, I sat on the committee, and I did take part.
I'd like to make a little clarification.
I think that the answer is...
My intent was...
Sarv, hang on just a sec. Let's hear from Lonnie, and then I'll recognize you. Go ahead, Lonnie.
I think that the $100 limit really will not work, and we need to look at it from the point of view of a monthly retainer as we have set up contractually. And when that retainer is exceeded, then we deal with it as an excess budget item like we deal with any other budget item.
I need to ask a clarifying, immensely ignorant question. When you have the attorney on retainer, that means that's how much we pay him, regardless of how much work we ask him to do. If he goes over that amount of work, then there's new billings. Is that correct?
No, the retainer, as we've set it up, is he's maxed out at that $2,500, and then anything beyond that has to be approved.
Okay, so but we might not spend that much if we had fewer inquiries.
Exactly.
Thank
exactly.
You.
It doesn't mean that he gets this. He gets it no matter what the workload.
Got it. Sorry.
My intent, I didn't have the motion here well written down here. My intent was to take the $100 limit away and just leave it at the retainer limit, and the CFO can look at that. If it's beginning to exceed, he'll let us know on excessive legal expenses. That was my intent.
So you're basically saying... Do you still want him to provide the estimate?
No.
Okay, so basically you would be striking the upon receipt of the inquiry, counsel will provide an estimate, and in its place saying such requests may not exceed the retainer amount?
Right.
Okay,
and if it does, then it comes to us. Would the billing
still be reviewed? By the CFO, right? That's part of any of this.
Absolutely.
Okay, so
this is Lydia. Can you put me back on the stack?
Okay, so what I'm hearing is an amendment. The amendment is to strike the upon receipt of an inquiry, counsel will provide an estimate of the cost of answering the question for inquiries over $100, and to substitute inquiries, the cost of inquiries shall not exceed the retainer amount. Is that correct, Sarv?
That's correct, and it'll be monitored by the CFO.
Okay. Is there a second to that amendment?
Second.
Okay. It's been seconded. Lydia?
Okay.
Lydia, before you go, is there anyone who hasn't spoken yet who would like to speak on this?
Actually, I would like to speak.
Okay. Phil and then Lydia.
Yeah. I would too, AC.
Okay. Phil, AC, and then Lydia.
My concern with the motion and with the amendment is that... It seems to me that by putting a $100 automatic pass-through, every question will become a $100 question. If I were an attorney, that's what I would do. I would prefer to see that our discretion be relied upon and an estimate for any question that we ask be generated at the time that we ask. If we choose to proceed... whatever the estimate happens to be, that is something we'll be accountable for in the end to the rest of the board. But I think that setting a $100 limit just raises the price of a $25 question to $100. And placing a cap at the retainer, again, gives the attorney discretion in our billing. And I would suspect that we would go to the limit every period.
AC.
Yeah, I wanted to raise a point of information. Is there anything wrong with submitting a question? If any director had a legal question, that they could submit a written question through the CFO to be forwarded to the lawyers, rather than we're placing a lot of emphasis on direct communications with them. Seems to me that we might want to consider legal questions from the directors to be submitted first, and so that they can have an opportunity to review the questions before we even get into the issue of having a private conversation.
To clarify, the motion as it stands calls for it to be submitted via the ED or the chair. Do you mean a process in addition to that?
What did you say? I'm sorry.
The motion that was written says that the requests from the directors are made are sent to the ED or the board chair, and that they then forward it to the attorney.
Well, that's fine too. I just
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The only thing I was when you say submit it, do you mean? I assume you mean it should be in writing, and they should. See if a response can be made by the attorney to the written request, rather than to get involved in a long, drawn-out dialogue with the attorney. That could really be costly to the network.
Yeah, the motion is written calls for the request to be in writing and the response to be in writing, both of them to be copied to the full board, and for the inquiry to be made by the executive director or the board chair on behalf of the requesting directors.
Okay.
Lydia.
Okay, so I don't object. I don't care about the $100. The main spirit of this thing was so that board members could start developing a sense of how much it costs to get our requests. I personally think many of our questions will be zero. He wouldn't even charge for them. That's my personal theory on the thing. But then, you know, if it's a simple question, then we can start saying, oh, a simple question like this may not be that expensive. However, if we send him everything we discussed at our meeting last night, of course, it's horrendous, right? So at the very, the one thing I really would like to see remain, regardless of taking out the $100, is the true cost, so that when he responds, what he's going to put on the billing is reflected in his response to us, rather than tying it specifically to the $2,500 thing. So that each item, every question comes back to us, oh, this cost you $100, because, of course, that's what's going to be on the billing toward the $2,500.
So are you asking to amend it so that the response should include the cost of the item or the bill?
Yes, I think that was I don't have it before me, but that was what we originally had.
Dave?
Yeah.
CFO
that in the response it would be the true cost.
Yes, sir?
Can we ask the CFO to forward us the true cost? He's the one who's got the billing.
Well, hold on. Okay, before we proceed, we're going to have to either vote this stuff or extend time yet again. So we've got to do one or the other. Actually, why don't – I'm confused now. I'm sorry. My understanding is that as of right now, the amendment doesn't include the board getting a copy of the cost of – each individual request, and I think I heard Lydia ask that be included. Oh, no, it says,
It says.
Council
it's
will copy the response
exactly.
to the PMB and ED
yeah.
along with the actual cost.
Exactly.
Okay, so that is in there.
That's already in there.
Okay, got it.
So all I'm saying is I don't object to the $100 being taken out. That's becoming too controversial. I'm fine with, I accept that as a friendly amendment, as long as my main concern is that the board start getting a sense of what this costs, because right now we're just talking through our hat because we don't know.
Okay.
I call the question.
You don't know who somebody would need to call to extend time. Is anybody going to call to extend time?
In order to call the question?
No. No, the question is automatically called if debate is not extended.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know time was up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wasn't clear. Time is up.
Okay.
Actually, time is long up. I apologize for not being on top of it.
Dave, this is Teresa. I'm very confused. I heard Sarv move to strike $100.
Right.
And then I heard Lydia refer to that as a friendly amendment. Mm-hmm. So I'm confused as to what exactly is on the table
There's no such thing as a friendly amendment.
I know,
so we're
going to
be voting on it, and hopefully, you know, we may do it without objection or we may not, but we're going to go to votes now to process this stuff. So the first vote is on Sarv's amendment, and Sarv's amendment is to strike the second sentence and in its place say that inquiries shall not exceed, or the cost of inquiry shall not exceed the retainer limit. Is there an objection to adopting that amendment? Phil, do you have any objection to that?
I do not object.
Okay. If there's no objection, then that will be, that substitution is adopted.
I think you're talking about eliminating the third sentence.
No, it's the second sentence.
I'm sorry.
No, she's right. It's the third sentence. I beg pardon.
The
oh, you're right.
Teresa's correct.
That's right. There's a period there. Okay.
So, So remove sentence number three and say cost of inquiry shall not exceed the retainer limit. Thank you.
Right. Okay. And so can you read the motion as amended before we vote?
Okay. Any three PNB directors may submit a question to corporate counsel, copying the question to the PNB, including the ED. Either the ED or the PNB chair will then forward the inquiry to counsel. Cost of inquiries shall not exceed the retainer limit. Counsel will copy the response to the PNB and ED along with the actual cost.
Could we add the CFO?
I think it's a general understanding that the CFO will, I mean, you're on the PNB list, so
right.
You get the actual cost with that.
Okay.
Do you want something
right.
beyond
uh-huh.
that?
Uh-huh. Okay. Sure.
And we agree that the costs are going to be monitored by the CFO by common consent.
Uh-huh.
Is there any objection to adopting that motion? Hearing none, it's adopted. Okay, we're just sailing right along through this agenda. The next item is Don's one-minute informational update on the audit committee.
I'm sorry about this, Mr. Chair, but we only just voted about that sentence. Can we just approve the whole thing as amended?
Yeah,
we
that's
did.
What we
only
just did.
Approved the third sentence.
No, we did both.
We voted the
whole.
We did? Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know where I was, but I'm through. All right.
Okay.
Wake up.
I don't blame you, though. Okay, Don?
Okay. Can someone time me, because I only have 1 minute?
Yeah, less than a minute,
would you?
Probably all will.
Okay, and would you
seconds.
Please warn me at 58 seconds?
No, you
sure.
were
okay.
at 59.
Okay, I was the director identified to convene the audit committee of the PNB, and we did that. We had two meetings. We had Mr. Wisdom, the National Foundation auditor, on one of our meetings who gave us background. We've had good discussions over auditing, the scope of the committee, and so on, a lot of rich discussions, and we have items that are on the table. We elected Berthold Reimers of the WBAI Signal area as our chair, and in conclusion, we actually missed our last meeting, which put us slightly behind, but we do have a meeting scheduled for Thursday, July 27 at 4:30 p.m. Pacific time. And Mary Berg and Evelyn Bethune and myself and others are going to support the chair, who has a big workload, so we're going to support him. And that committee will begin functioning at high speed very, very soon again. We'll have a report to the next PNB meeting.
Thank you very much. Okay, the next thing is unfinished business, and the first item is the nominations in the election process for the committee to investigate racism and sexism. First on the process, after we accept the nominations, we'll talk about the balloting and where the ballots get sent. And I wanted to, without having consulted them, offer the services of the KPFK Elections Working Group, since Teresa expressed that she wasn't comfortable with the process. But so think about that while we're doing the rest of this, Teresa, how you want to handle the tallying. Okay, so nominations are open. I'd like to go station by station, and it will also accept nominations for an affiliate. Yes.
A point of information. We are voting to nominate and elect people to a committee whose framework has not even been defined. Don't we have to spend some time to do that? I mean, what does it mean to investigate? They're just going to decide on their own how they want to do this? I don't think that's appropriate.
Let me
so I guess it's a point of order. I think we can't get to these nominations till we know what the committee is supposed to be doing. Specifically, the motion that was passed was extremely broad and vague.
Okay, I'm going to the point's not well taken for two reasons. First, I think it is clear, but secondly, we have agreed the committees that any member of a committee may put business before the committee, and so and the scope can be defined in that way. So the point of order is not well taken. I believe it's clear what the intent of the committee to do. Its various processes are, like we just heard for the audit committee, something that it will be charged with working out. Do you want to challenge the rule of the chair? I mean, appeal the ruling of the chair?
Well, I'm sorry, but yes, I do. I mean,
okay,
if the
there's
committee
been an appeal to the ruling of the chair.
Hold on.
There's, excuse me. There's been an appeal to the ruling of the chair. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded. Okay, would you like to describe the rationale for the appeal now?
Well, we've never had a committee that defines its own work totally and how it will proceed and where it will proceed and what it will take and how many people it will investigate. We have no definition of any of that. So this is an unprecedented formation of a committee where the work has never been spelled out. I see that. So I'm challenging it because I think my point was, in fact, well taken. I think it is germane to the issue in this particular case.
Okay.
And that's the case I'm talking about.
And I do want to clarify that that no committee may approve a resolution for itself. Any resolutions of the committee do have to come back to the come back to the board. But there's been, so that's the appeal. Will you call the roll, Teresa? The question is, I always get this wrong. Shall the ruling of the chair be upheld?
That's right. A yes vote means
point uphold of order. The rule of the chair. Yes, Bob.
This is a debatable motion, and I would like to speak.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I'd like to get on the stack as well.
Oh, okay.
This is Evelyn. So would I.
All righty, hang on. I have Bob.
And I'll decide whether or not I want to get on.
Okay, so I have Bob, Don, Evelyn.
Deb.
Deb. And you know what? I'm going to take two. This I consider a motion on process. I'm going to take two pro and two con. Bob, are you speaking pro or con?
Pro upholding the chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. The motion that created this committee is in form virtually identical to numerous motions that this board has adopted over the last, 3 years of its existence to set up committees that aren't in the bylaws. It has, I don't remember, maybe 2-3 sentences of mission and goal. In fact, actually, the bylaws have even less. The permanent committees have, in some cases, one sentence or less, and then they're elected. You elect people, and the committee, you know, a lot of their first task is to kind of say, how should we operate, and then come back to the board. And that's indeed, I would hope, what this committee would do, is to say, we think our purview should be defined this way, our procedure should be X, what do you think, board? And then the board will send them on their way with the charge. So this is completely in order to proceed to elect first and then define the details later, but the broad scope is already defined in the motion that we adopted and refused to rescind. That's it.
John, are you speaking to uphold or oppose reverse the ruling of the chair? And remember, I know where you live.
I think I wanted to speak to the merits of Mary's concern, but I don't know how I'm going to vote.
Go ahead.
Well, one of the things, when people accept nominations, I think it's fair. For instance, if this committee is going to fly from signal area to signal area and hold hearings and do interviews, it's going to be very time-consuming. So if there's a challenge to over racism in Houston, if the committee flies there and is going to spend several days taking testimony and trying to determine whether it's legitimate, I mean, some people... So here's what I would do. People who are willing to accept nominations to this committee are going to, if this is sustained, are going to have to evaluate whether or not they think it's a workable committee, that it can actually function, whether or not it's expected to make decisions about people's internal motives and in their comments. So, I mean, I would just say that if this is sustained, people who are nominated and take positions will just have to resign if it's an unrealistic mandate.
Okay, I want to clarify. What's being appealed here is my ruling that it is out of order to populate the committee at this time. So... issues about whether what you think people should take into account or not, I'm not clear that it really addresses the point of whether it is in order now to proceed with populating.
I was
the chair has ruled that it is now in order to take nominations and populate the committee.
And yeah, and my comments were that I think there are merits to the concerns that.
Okay, thank you. Evelyn, are you speaking in favor of sustaining the chair or reversing the chair?
Sustaining the chair.
Okay, go ahead.
I think that this motion and was passed before it came up for reevaluation. It was passed again, and to not populate it only delays it again. There has been such a dialogue going back and forth about exactly what the committee will do. That really can't be determined until people are put on it, and they, along with the PMB, come up with the direction that it should take. But since we did vote in favor of doing this, we should get on with the business of doing it.
Okay, Deb, are you speaking to sustain or reverse?
Reverse.
Okay, go ahead.
I think it's we have to look at this committee like not like all other committees. It is very different from all other committees, and we've had warnings from experts in the field that we're about to tear ourselves to pieces. And I think in view of that, in view of the fact that we paid so much good money for their advice, I think it would be very foolish for us to ignore it and just charge ahead and let this committee do make its own rules or do whatever it needs to do, thinks it needs to do. I think we need to firm this up in advance before we populate it and before it goes any further.
Mr. Chair, can I get on the staff, please?
We've had two in support and one kind of opposed and one sentiment, but I just want to point out this is a parliamentary question we're asking here, which is the question of whether it is the chair should be sustained in ruling that it is in order, not whether you think it's a good idea or not. The point of order was made that it's not in order to populate the committee because the charge hasn't been defined.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the question that's before us. I've heard two comments sustaining the chair. I've heard one and a half to repeal. So I'll take one more comment to reverse the ruling of the chair, and then we're going to go to a vote. Is there anybody else speaking to reverse the ruling of the chair?
May I raise a point of personal privilege?
Go ahead.
Having not been in on prior discussions, I don't know what issue or issues brought up the creation of this committee. Could somebody please explain to me what the motivation for creating the committee in the first place was?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Oh, my stars and garters.
I'll send out
Phil,
for breakfast.
Phil, I suspect that you will get that there are as many different views of that. Can we hear maybe from two people in response to Phil's question who differ a little bit on that? And Lisa,
a point of order, Mr. Chairman.
I move to extend
point
for 5 hours.
Yeah,
point of
that
order.
Will do it. Pizza point. And then breakfast, please.
Point of order.
Yes.
You know, with all due respect to our new member on the PNB, and I have enormous respect for you, and I fully understand the fog that you must be in as a result of not being a part of this. But I do not believe that it would be possible to fairly put forward at this time the rationale for this committee. I think it would touch off a variety of reactions, and I would just wonder if the new member should abstain from the vote if he's not really...
That was, in fact, my intention.
And,
yeah.
And I'd also like to recommend that I can send you the email links to the discussion, which was in public session. It was discussed on several occasions. You might want to consult that.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to go to a vote now. This is show the ruling of the chair.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, Mr. Chair.
Yes?
You did ask if there was someone else who wanted to speak about whether or not to sustain the chair.
If there is another person who would like to oppose the sustaining of the chair, I'll recognize them. Go ahead.
I would. When you asked, someone made a statement about there are probably as many opinions as to what this committee should be doing as there are people here, something to that effect.
I said why it's needed, not what it's doing.
Okay. Or why it is needed. I think that's indicative of the fact that we could be just shooting buckshot, going in any direction. There is no financial impact statement on this committee, and therefore I think it is very unwise to populate this committee before somebody decides what this committee is going to be doing.
Okay, I want to remind that this is a parliamentary question of whether it's in order to do it, not whether it's wise or not.
Well, there's been no parliament, no...
I don't think it's in order. I don't think it's in order to populate it before there is some agreement on what exactly this committee is going to do.
Okay, thank you. So now, will you call the roll, please, on whether the chair shall be sustained? The ruling of the chair is that it is in order now to consider nominations for the committee and the election process. If you agree with that, please vote yes. If you believe that it is not in order, vote no. Will you call the roll, please?
All right. We start with Lydia Brazon.
Yes.
A.C. Bird.
Yes.
Lisa Davis.
Yes.
Ray LaForest.
Yes.
Thank you. Ambrose Lane.
Yes.
Bob Lederer.
Yes.
Alan Minsky.
Pass.
Rosalinda Montez Palacio.
Yes.
Sarv Randhawa. Sarv. Rip Robbins.
Yes.
Rip Rob. What?
Yes.
Thank you. Rip Robbins.
Yes.
That was the yes.
Okay. Sarv, what did you... Did Sarv get on? Okay. I did not hear Sarv still. Okay. Rob Robinson.
Yes.
Deb Shafto?
No.
Zarina Shakir? Zarina? Phil Jackson?
I will abstain.
John White?
Abstain.
LaVarne Williams?
No.
Teresa Allen says no. Harry Berg?
No.
Evelyn Bethune?
Yes.
All right. And Alan Minsky?
I'll abstain.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 yes. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 no. Pass.
Did you call Rip?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
yes.
I didn't hear.
You said yes.
Okay, so
he answered twice. First time I took his vote for Rob Robinson's vote, I think.
Or
Sarv's vote. So.
Okay, so the ruling is upheld, and we're going to proceed to populate the committee.